This is an iHeart podcast.
Dome is doing a bunch of interviews and they're not going well. We'll talk to John Phillips about that. Lee Smith thinks the FBI might have some blood on their hands. We're going to talk legal and local and we'll make fun of Chuck Schumer. All that's coming up on I'm Right. Kamala Harris is losing the campaign for the presidency right now. She simply is. And no, I'm not going off a poll number. So did you see this poll? What about that poll? Did you see that? It's not that. You know, if you watch, if you pay attention to campaigns, they'll tell you if they're winning, if they're losing, who they think they're behind with. You can tell by where they spend their time and where they spend their money. Honestly, campaigns are very similar to you, to me. What do you truly value? What do I truly value? Well, where do you spend your time? Where do you spend your money? That's what you truly value. Now, the Harris campaign. The View, they're going on The View. Don't worry, we have some clips of things. The View, Stephen Colbert, 60 Minutes, Howard Stern. Wait a minute. Let's be clear about this. Election day is when? Not a month from now. It's right now. Because of early voting in this country and the importance of early voting and how many people vote early, election day is today and tomorrow and the next day. It's every day between now and the official election day. The election is now. It is happening right now. And if you're Kamala Harris, you should be in a place where you're banking on certain things. You're banking on certain voting coalitions. You know, the people who watch The View, they're all a bunch of crazy liberal white women. They're the most committed communists in the United States of America. That's the audience of The View. Why in the world would she be going on The View? Stephen Colbert, why would she be doing these things? Well, it tells you all you need to know. Whatever the public poll numbers are or public perception is, the Kamala Harris campaign is a failing campaign as of right now. I'm not saying she's going to lose. I hope she will. I think she will. But right now they're failing and they know they're failing. So they're trying to shore up a coalition they should already have. But here is the problem. And honestly, I know this is going to sound weird. Don't think I've gone soft on you. I almost feel bad for her staffers and her advisors. They're all dirty commies, so I don't really feel bad, but I almost feel bad because just like we used to talk about when Joe Biden was trying to run again, you can cover and you can fake and you can lie and you can splice up a little video for Instagram here and you can run a propaganda campaign there and you can do all these things. And they have been doing all these things. You can do all that. But at some point, you need the candidate to perform. You need the candidate to perform. Think about it like boxing. Everyone knows about boxing. I'm not saying you're a boxing expert. Maybe you are, but everyone knows what it is, right? And so leading up to a major fight, you want this major fight to go well for your fighter. You can do all kinds of stuff. You can buy all kinds of media to get the crowd on his side. You can play it up at the press conference. You can do everything you can to anger the other guy. You can surround him with the best trainers, the best people, the most film study, the best strategy sessions. And all these things can help and they can make a difference. But in the end, ding, ding, you got to go fight. And if your fighter can't fight, there's very little you can do to overcome that. Kamala Harris is sitting down for friendly interviews. She knows the questions that are going to be asked ahead of time, and she answers questions about the border like this.
There was an historic flood of undocumented immigrants coming across the border the first 3 years of your administration. As a matter of fact, arrivals quadrupled from the last year of President Trump. Was it a mistake to loosen the immigration policies as much as you did?
It's a long-standing problem, and solutions are at hand. And from day one, literally, we have been offering solutions.
What I was asking was it a mistake to kind of allow that flood to happen in the first place?
I think the policies that we have been proposing are about fixing a problem, not promoting a problem. Okay.
But the numbers did quadruple.
And the numbers today, because of what we have done, we have cut the flow of illegal immigration by half.
We have
cut the flow of fentanyl by half. But we need Congress to be able to act to actually fix the problem.
Look, I'm not even going to be a partisan about this. Maybe you're one of the dirty commies who watches this show. If you're watching that, is that person ready to become president of the United States of America? She says, of course not. It's a disaster. She was asked about the economy. Remember, every single poll shows immigration and inflation, essentially the economy, as being the top issues for voters. Republican, independent, Democrats hate the country, so we're not going to count them. But Republicans, independents, more specifically, they're worried about inflation and immigration. Democrats just want to murder their babies. That's all they care about. So we'll talk about independents right now. If you're someone sitting at home, maybe you personally don't like Donald Trump. He's too this, he's too that. I get all that. Maybe you're sitting there. Maybe you have your ballot in hand. Remember, people have their ballots in hand right now. Today's election day. And you're stressing about your wife just got home from the grocery store. She couldn't afford groceries. You're worried about making the rent. And you see Kamala Harris ask the question about the economy on 60 Minutes. And she answers the question like this. How can you vote for her?
That your economic plan would add $3 trillion to the federal deficit over the next decade. How are you going to pay for that?
Okay, so the other economists that have reviewed my plan versus my opponent and determined that my economic plan would strengthen America's economy, his would weaken it.
But pardon me, Madam Vice President, the question was, how are you going to pay for it?
Well, one of the things is I'm going to make sure that the richest among us who can afford it pay their fair share in taxes. It is not right that teachers and nurses and firefighters are paying a higher tax rate than billionaires and the biggest corporations.
But
I plan on making that fair.
But we're dealing with the real world here.
But the real world includes...
How are you going to get this through Congress?
You know, when you talk quietly with a lot of folks in Congress, they know exactly what I'm talking about because their constituents know exactly what I'm talking about.
She can't do it. She can't fight. All the fluff, all the puff, all the managers, all the press conferences, all the everything, she can't do it. And here's something else. We have to show you this from The View. Campaigns have been shrunk is how I would probably describe it. And this is what I mean by campaigns being shrunk, not necessarily time frame wise. But most people don't consume the news in the traditional way they used to. You get home, long day, you have dinner, sit down, you turn on NBC, ABC, CBS. That's a very old school way of thinking. You're watching The First right now. I bet you there's a 50-50 chance you're not even on a television. You, of course, can watch The First on TV, but maybe you're sitting here right now watching on your phone. Maybe it's on your iPad while you're working out. People consume the news on demand in their own way now. So what that means for candidates is campaigns have been shrunk to either promote or avoid 15 to 30-second sound bites. That's the idea around a campaign. Either you have this money line, even if everything else was dumb, and that's what you want to go viral, so I'll be watching it. Oh my gosh, it's on Facebook. Or you want to avoid the disastrous line that will go viral and everyone will be playing it. Kamala Harris has a problem. She's Joe Biden's vice president. People in this country, not me, but people personally like Joe Biden. I hate him. That's set that aside. But they despise his policies. They're very, very unhappy. She got asked about what she would do differently. This is the 15 seconds she couldn't afford.
Well, if anything, would you have done something differently than President Biden during the past 4 years?
There is not a thing that comes to mind in terms of, and I've been a part of most of the decisions that have had impact.
It is what? What time is it? Is it like 9 o'clock Eastern time? 9:10, 9:15? I don't know. I don't have a clock in here. By now, I would bet money the Trump campaign already has that little 10, 15 second clip going everywhere across the internet. Probably they've already purchased TV ads. What a disaster she is. I'm not even going to say it made you uncomfortable because I love it. I'm right. John Phillips is right a lot, too. He knows a lot about Kamala Harris. We're going to talk to John Phillips about her in a moment. Before we talk to John, I want to talk to you about why I'm so pepped up and full of energy. It's not just because I'm excited about the election or how bad Dome is doing. It's because I have a good night's sleep every night, every single night. And when there's a night where I feel like I'm not going to, in fact, this was last night. Yesterday, maybe you saw during the show, I was sipping on a cup of coffee. Sometimes I love coffee so much, I want an afternoon cup. Problem is, I'm 43, not 23. If I do that, I won't be able to sleep well. But I have Dream Powder from Beam. I have a little cup of hot chocolate before bed, only it's Dream Powder in there. It's delicious, but it puts me to sleep no matter what. And I wake up feeling good no matter what. That's the difference with Dream Powder. Go get some of it in your life. You will thank me for it. You'll always have a bag of it. Go to shopbeam.com/Jesse Kelly. We'll be back.
Let me tell you what your critics and the columnists say.
Okay.
They say that the reason so many voters don't know you is that you have changed your position on so many things. You were against fracking, now you're for it. You supported looser immigration policies, now you're tightening them up. You were for Medicare for all, now you're not. So many that people don't truly know what you believe or what you stand for. And I know you've heard that.
In the last 4 years, I have been Vice President of the United States. And I have been traveling our country. And I have been listening to folks and seeking what is possible in terms of common ground. I believe in building consensus. We are a diverse people, geographically, regionally, in terms of where we are in our backgrounds.
Joining me now, my friend, host of the John Phillips Show, John Phillips. Obviously, John, there's a bunch of things we could take away from just that one clip, the flip-flop in the hypocrisy, all the standards, all the stuff we talk about all the time. But setting all that stuff aside, John, what hammers me hardest is that that was a fairly benign question. People were acting like it's real journalism. That's a basic journalism question. And the answer was awful. She's running a billion-dollar campaign. Staffers, advisors, that they had to know that was coming. What is wrong with these people?
Well, she has flipped more times in the Chevrolet Corvair, and that's the reason that she has a tough time with that question, because it's just true. What she has going for her is that her supporters don't care. The only thing they care about is that she can beat the evil orange man. And if she has to repudiate every position that she's ever taken, if she has to flip-flop across the board, then that's what she has to do to win. Because winning is the most important thing for them. Which, okay, that will make the Democratic base happy as long as you do okay in the polls and you ultimately end up beating him. The problem that she has is with anyone who's not already in her corner. Because people who aren't political animals, people who don't wake up every day and read the papers and watch shows like this, people who just go to work and take their kids to school and those sorts of things, those people just want to know, what are you going to do for me? What's in it for me? And she has no answers for those people. If you're one of those people and you just saw the clip that you just played, I don't know how you get motivated to go vote for this woman. And that's the problem that she has. And that's what they're going to have to figure out this last month of the campaign. And I think that's why so much panic has set in.
John, you mentioned the panic. I'm glad you brought that up because I'm hearing the exact same thing. I know you're hearing the same rumors. There's panic, Democrat staffers. We have leaked phone calls. Oh, my, she's underwater. She's underwater. But look, not long ago, I watched my son not study for his chemistry exam. I told him for 3 nights to study. He didn't study, and he had a C in the class, and he bombed it. And it was the predictability of all of it that floored me, the fact that he should have known that's how that was going to go. Everyone knew Kamala Harris can't campaign. She's a moron. She wasn't popular beforehand. She tried to run a primary and she bombed. She's bombed as vice president. If I'd pinned down John Phillips and asked him as soon as they appointed her how her presidential campaign would go, you would have explained back then exactly how it was going to go. So if you can see it and I can see it, my friggin' dog can see it, why didn't they?
Because I don't think they were on the same page. You had a nominee, Joe Biden, who didn't want to leave the stage. You had Democratic Party power brokers who were convinced that he couldn't win, with Nancy Pelosi being the hatchet woman, who came in and forced Joe Biden out. Well, Nancy Pelosi went on TV, and I couldn't exactly figure out why. She just kept kicking him in the crotch and kicking him in the crotch and kicking him in the crotch. You got what you wanted. You wanted him out of the race. He's out of the race. Declare victory, enjoy yourself, and move on. But she had all this animosity towards him. She had all this anger towards him. She just did interview after interview after interview where she just kept disrespecting him. And then I think I figured it out, which is he was not supposed to endorse Kamala. He was supposed to endorse an open Democratic convention where then the power brokers could pick whoever it is that they determined was the most electable. If you go back to that day that he got out of the race, it was two statements that were put together kind of hastily, including one that Nancy Pelosi said she didn't think he even wrote himself. He got out of the race, and then like a short period of time later, he came out and said, "And I endorse Kamala." Well, because of the calendar, that took an open convention off the table, and they were stuck with her. In many ways, I think Kamala is Joe's revenge for doing what they did to him. And who knows, maybe he'll end up getting the last laugh after all.
Okay, now that is an interesting theory, and I had not considered that before, but it does seem, it was a little vindictive. Pelosi, who monitors everything she says, this woman says nothing by accident, went on a kick Joe Biden in the nuts campaign on the media, forgetting my language, everybody, but that's exactly what she did, and I couldn't figure out the why. So if they didn't want Dome, do you have some idea of who the powers that be did want?
Well, my guess is Josh Shapiro. I mean, he's certainly the most successful Democratic governor, or at least the most popular Democratic governor. Let's face it, this time around, Pennsylvania is to 2024 what Florida was in 2000. Whoever wins Pennsylvania will likely win the presidential race. He's a popular governor of Pennsylvania. If you put him on the ticket and that helps you win the bellwether state, the state that's going to determine the winner, seems like a no-brainer to me. If he's the nominee, even better, because you don't have to run his relationship with the voters through some other person who they may or may not like. If the Democrats had Josh Shapiro at the top of their ticket, they'd probably be comfortably ahead in Pennsylvania. And if they're comfortably ahead in Pennsylvania, I think they'd probably win the election. Now, if I had to put money down, I would say they lose Pennsylvania. And I think if you lose Pennsylvania, you lose the election. That decision that they made for vice president and the decision to go with Kamala over an open convention, those two decisions are decisions they're going to regret.
Let's circle back to Kamala Harris, because obviously everyone's talking about her today and this disastrous press tour she's doing, which is the friendliest of friendly press tours. It's The View, it's Howard Stern, a couple questions on 60 Minutes that weren't even that difficult. And yet she's bombing so, so badly. And John, I don't understand. This woman's almost 60 years old. If you do anything, if you're a mechanic, a homemaker, or whatever, you do anything for long enough, you'll be able to do certain things without thinking about it. She can't talk. That's what her job has been for 30 years. Why can't she even talk?
When she ran for office here in California, I had friends who were in the press corps who were covering her races, whether it be for Attorney General or U.S. Senate. And the most common answer that Kamala would give when they'd ask her a question was, "My staff will get back to you with an answer." And because we're a one-party state, the Democrats control access to everything. If you cause too much of a stink about an answer like that, they would just cut you out of the information loop. So she was able to get away with it. Well, if that's how you're able to get away with it for years and years and years, you just expect that's how the world is. Well, when you're running for president, that's not exactly how the world is. And when they ask a follow-up question, the wheels just come off. And that's what you're seeing happen with her right now in real time. You also know that her staff doesn't trust her, which is one of the reasons that they haven't allowed her to go out and do so many of these interviews. They feel that their back is up against the wall now and they have no other choice. But they've kept her away from all of these shows and all of these interviews for a very long time. Well, if you ever played golf or ever, you know, played any sort of athletic sport, you know that if you don't have any reps, if you haven't been out there swinging the club, if you don't have your timing, and then you need to go out, you need to play with your buddies and not embarrass yourself, you're out of luck because you're just rusty. And she's just rusty. She hasn't done this in a very long time. And now she's doing it. And every time she sits down for an interview, she steps on a different rake.
So I realized they were desperate just as we wrap up here. But this media tour, obviously, they were very focused with who they lined it up with and make sure it's all going to be very friendly. I know she needs some help right now, but this was a mistake, right, John? If you don't have a candidate who can talk, if she can't do it, then rolling her out there to talk is setting her up for failure. Didn't they just set her up for failure?
Well, they feel like they have no other choice. I mean, you look at where she is compared to Joe, and she's doing worse across the board. She's doing worse with Latinos. She's doing worse with Blacks. She's doing worse with, Arabs. Just go down the list. It's just essentially single women who are keeping her viable as a candidate, and college-educated whites, specifically whites with graduate school degrees. That's it. So you either need to go out, you need to expand the tent, or you need to just take the L, and they're not going to take the L. So they're sending her out there hoping that she'll have a good interview or have some moment that's viral, and she'll bring some of these people back. But it's October now, and if you're still having trouble with Black voters or Latinos or Arabs and you're the Democratic candidate, I don't know if it's going to happen.
Yeah, it is. It's election day because of early voting. It's election day now, today, tomorrow. Golly, man. All right, John Phillips, I got to let you go. Thank you, my brother. You almost, if they weren't terrible people, like I said in the opening, you almost feel bad for the staffers of Kamala Harris because you don't have the fighter. You don't have the guy. Anyway, let's talk to Lee Smith. Is Iran really trying to murder Donald Trump or is it the FBI? Before we do that, let's do this. Let's talk to you about your money and your values, your morals. You know, your money needs to follow those. My money needs to follow those. I'm not lecturing anybody. I'm not perfect at this either. But when we have something like a cell phone, you're going to have a cell phone company. And our cell phone companies, the big ones, Verizon, AT&T, T-Mobile, are horrible, evil, commie companies who hate you and your values. I have Pure Talk. When I pay my cell phone bill every month, not only is mine significantly lower than yours, I'm on the same 5G network you are, and I support a company who shares my values. Pure Talk loves America, hires Americans. Their CEO is a veteran who fought for this country. When they give to charity, they give to veterans. That's my cell phone company. Switch. It's easy. You don't even have to switch phones or switch numbers. It's just easy. PureTalk.com/JesseTV. It's cake. Go do it. We'll be back.
Do we have a real close ally in Prime Minister Netanyahu?
I think, with all due respect, the better question is, do we have an important alliance between the American people and the Israeli people? And the answer to that question is yes.
Pretty interesting stuff. There's lots of interesting stuff going on with this administration, Iran, assassination attempts, and we're going to bring in an interesting guy to talk about it, my friend Lee Smith, of course, author of the book Disappearing the President. I really read everything Lee Smith writes. So, Lee, I have been fascinated, just trying to be as dispassionate about this topic as humanly possible. I've been fascinated watching the White House since October the 7th try to do this balancing act and walk this tightrope of, yeah, it's bad to massacre 1,000 Jews and burn babies in the oven. At the same time, those people kind of had it coming, and I love the Palestinians. It has been fascinating to watch the messaging.
Well, I mean, it's big trouble for the United States. I mean, not just this particular administration. Israel is an important ally. And when you start undermining allies the way that the Biden-Harris administration has done, you send a message to lots of people around the world, not least of which are the bad guys, the people who have us in their crosshairs. I mean, the one really excellent thing that's happened here, and it's a terrible thing for an American to have to say, but that the government of Israel, the Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, has ignored Joe Biden and Kamala Harris and has gone about dismantling the Iranian access, which has caused problems, for the United States since 1978. I mean, and they have a tremendous amount of American blood on their hands. So while we celebrate the accomplishments of Benjamin Netanyahu, we rue the fact that our own government has not supported an important ally and has in fact undermined it and continues to fund the different terror enclaves, including Lebanon and Gaza, where people are plotting against Americans as well as American allies.
Lee, I'm going to ask a question you and I have discussed before privately and on camera, but to what end? It's hard for logical, normal, decent human beings to look at such a pro-Iranian regime like Obama was, and of course now like right. Biden was, which that's the same thing. But it's hard for people to understand the why. There's no question this country has been an enemy of ours for decades. As you rightly pointed out, they have gallons of American blood. How many American service members are maimed or dead courtesy of Qassem Soleimani's training in Iraq? I could go down the list, but why the sympathy, affinity for Iran? Explain it to us in a way we can understand.
I'll start with a dispassionate response because that's kind of how it starts. It's an academic theory, and the academic theory is you balance off different powers in a region to bring stability, right? It's academic. It's foolish, and this may be the way that Europeans saw it in the 17th and 18th century, trying to balance off different small warring European states. The fact is that the United States is a superpower, and our foreign policy is best conducted when we identify different allies who not only share our values and with whom our interests often intersect, but who are powerful and who can get the job done. And that's why Israel is so important. But back to the academic theory very briefly. So the idea is to balance off different powers against each other. You want to have everyone more or less as strong as everyone else, so they've all been deterred. The problem with that is, though, is that you wind up empowering different people who are actually adversarial to your own interests. And that's what's happened by assisting the Islamic Republic of Iran. This is what's happened. The fact is, there's also another element, and I'm not going to be dispassionate about this, but Barack Obama is a leftist, right? And the Islamic Republic of Iran has been a leftist cause since 1978, 1979, the date of the Islamic Revolution. And why is that? Because they're anti-American at its core. The anti-Israel stuff is an effect of that. They hate Israel because Israel is allied with the United States. It's primarily us that they hate because we represent the West. So for the left to align itself with the Islamic Republic is what's been going on for nearly half a century. So these two different things intersect. The academic stupidity about trying to balance off a different region, which would be fine if we were a tiny European state in the 18th century, but we're not. We're the world's greatest nation and a superpower, a formidable power, the world's greatest power ever. So again, there's the academic theory and there's the leftism. And both of these things have led to profound moral rot inside of Washington, D.C., particularly on the left, and right now zeroed in on 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue.
Lee, I guess we're going to get a little philosophical today just because I love to pick your brain about this stuff.
Right.
I understand why a leftist, a communist like Obama, the Susan Rices of the world, I understand why they would embrace Islamists because, communists are just about power and destruction and the horrible, evil commie things. What I don't understand fully is why the Islamists would embrace communists. Those two things don't necessarily seem to line up. Explain that for me.
Well, they will to a certain extent. I mean, this is what happened with the Islamic revolution. I mean, all of the communists thought that they were, the communists thought, yay, finally we've got a horse we can ride into power, meaning the Islamists. And then, of course, within two years, they were flushed out not only out of the regime, but out of the country. A lot of the different, not in the United States, but if you look in Europe and a lot of the Scandinavian countries, all those Iranians there are their parents and grandparents are communists, and that's why they got flushed out of Iran. So it works for a bit. It's a temporary arrangement, and that's presumably what we're seeing right now. Remember that it's not as if the Iranians have shown vast amounts of gratitude to Barack Obama and the Obama team for all the sanctions relief that we've provided, for legalizing their nuclear weapons program. Remember, they're still extremely hostile. So, the communists can coddle their green friends. That's what it's called, the Red-Green Alliance, of course. So the Reds can coddle their green friends, but at a certain point, the Greens get angry. They take the power and they start throttling the Reds.
Yeah, very reminiscent of the Nazi-Japanese alliance, both of whom fighting a war of racial superiority. That is just so odd how either of them thought that was going to work out in the end. Anyway, setting that aside, you wrote a fascinating piece about Trump in Iran, the FBI's potential involvement and all that. Lee, break it down for us.
Yeah, I want to make very clear, first of all, as I think there was a little bit of misunderstanding about the piece, the Iranian regime is definitely keen to kill Donald Trump, right? And we know that not from what the FBI has said, but from what the Iranians have said themselves. Why? Because Donald Trump went after the Iranians. He killed their terror chief, Qasem Soleimani. And the Iranians have also tried to kill other Trump officials, including Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, Iran envoy Brian Hook, and two of Trump's national security advisors, John Bolton and Robert O'Brien. So they definitely want to go after Trump. But what happened here was that Biden's DNI briefed the Trump campaign at the end of September that there was an Iranian plot. Well, if you go through the documents, what you find out, it's not an Iranian plot at all. There is no evidence that it went through official Iranian channels. And every other example we have of genuine Iranian plots, we see very clearly how it went through official Iranian channels. IRGC especially, Quds Force. This is how it happens. This was a Pakistani national who entered or who tried to enter the country in Texas in April 2024. Jesse, here's the insane thing about the story. Customs at the border was not going to let this guy enter. Again, a Pakistani national was not going to let him enter. FBI Dallas office sponsored his entry into the government, and he stayed in this country for several months before he was arrested, astonishingly, July 12th. The day before the first attempt on Donald Trump's life. So there's no evidence. I mean, you and I can talk about that, and I'm sure your audience has, your audience has been following this closely too. What happened with the first assassination attempt, July 13th? Was this strictly incompetence? Was it worse than that? Was it malevolence? What I'm saying here is we don't have any evidence of whether this man was set up to kill Donald Trump. I think that's not the case, but I think that the FBI has lots of questions they need to answer about the Asif Merchant case, and that's the name of the Pakistani national that the FBI let in April, and that's who they arrested in the Iran plot. The plot was hatched by the FBI. So again, Christopher Wray, needs to answer questions. Unfortunately, not all of our elected representatives have done a very good job of holding his feet to the fire, which is where they need to be for us to get the answers that we deserve.
Yes, I'm sure the House and Senate GOP will be cracking down on him at any moment. Lee, why do the intelligence agencies, why do they hate Donald Trump so much? How much? I don't know. We can decide how much we believe they're involved in these attempts, but why do they hate him so much?
Well, you know, Jesse, I'm working on a follow-up to that piece, and one of the things that I'm finding is one of the reasons they're cooking this stuff up is they want to keep, and you might remember some of the reporting right after the January 13th attempt in Butler, Pennsylvania, on President Trump's life. The Secret Service is keen to keep Trump out of the away from these big rallies, right? Because this is how Trump breathes. It's how he lives. He feeds off of this energy, and he feeds his audiences with energy. It's amazing. I call it the Church of America. There's actually a section there in my book, Disappearing the President, on Trump rallies, which are just amazing American celebrations. And this is what the regime wants to take away from Donald Trump. So I think that this is one of the reasons that they're doing it. Also, of course, they want to deflect attention away from the fact that it's Democrats who are trying to kill Donald Trump, right? Iranians hate Donald Trump. They'd like to kill him, but the attempts on Donald Trump's life were made by Harris supporters. So that's one reason. But again, I think that a very big reason is they want to keep Donald Trump hidden underground as they did in 2020 with COVID. They want to lock him up in a basement, and that's not where Donald Trump lives. Donald Trump is like he's like the bald eagle who needs to spread his wings and be outside, sharing laughs and sharing information with Americans. But that's what they want to do. They want to ground him and turn him into Joe Biden, or they want to turn him into Kamala Harris, who's basically running the Biden campaign in a basement.
That is fascinating. I hadn't really even considered that angle of it. Of course, they just want to hide him in a house. Lee Smith, thank you, my brother, as always. All right. Let's talk some legal and local next. We love to talk presidential politics. We're obsessed with it. Look, I talk a lot of presidential politics myself, but what is it you and I discuss all the time on this show? Legal and local. That is how we will take this country back. Locally. Drain the swamp. You can't drain the swamp from the swamp. You have to take back the country locally. Take back your community. Take back your town. Take back your county. Those are wins we can have, and it's a way we can save the United States of America. Joining me now, Kimberly Herman, Executive Director of the Southeastern Legal Foundation. Okay, Kim, speaking of legal, local, you're knee-deep in a segregation, critical race theory case right now. What's this all about?
Yeah, so, I mean, talking about taking your communities back and your schools back, we're representing a brave teacher up in Evanston, Illinois. She filed a complaint with the Department of Education all the way back in 2019 because her school district is segregating teachers and segregating students. When I say segregation, I'm talking these teachers go into a staff meeting, the white teachers are put into one room, the non-white teachers are put into another room, and then they are taught lessons about how to bring race into the classroom. So she filed this complaint. The Department of Education agreed with her, but then Biden took office, and the Biden-Harris Department of Education is now saying segregation's okay. They dismissed basically this case and they have ignored the letter of finding. So we filed a federal lawsuit on her behalf. And now we're fighting tooth and nail to stop segregation up in Evanston, Illinois.
Separating the white teachers from the non-white teachers. What a country we live in now. Okay, let's talk about this Riley Gaines case you're involved in. Riley Gaines was doing a little speaking tour. What are you doing?
Yeah, so Riley Gaines, as everyone knows, is going around the country raising awareness about Title IX and trying to stop boys from being in girls' locker rooms, trying to stop boys from being in girls' sports. And Turning Point USA wanted to bring her to speak on the campus at University of New Mexico. And they said, you can bring her to speak, but you have to pay us $10,000 first. to have security fees while all the time, while there's a drag queen event going on campus with no security fees. So of course we filed a lawsuit and the judge there has issued a preliminary injunction. We're very excited about this, saying that the school can't discriminate based on viewpoint, that it can't charge one group $10,000 and another group nothing to bring speakers onto campus. And so we're gonna keep on litigating it, but Riley's got to be able to speak on campus. We have to be able to raise awareness to Title IX and gender ideology and this obsession with transing all of our young children across the country.
You take on these universities. How deep does the rot go? Because it's easy if you spend too much time focusing on the headline stories and online videos of some dirty commie professor. It's easy to come to the conclusion we should just essentially raise America's university system to the ground and start over again. But how deep does the rot go, Kim? You're in it.
Yeah, I mean, you're not off base here in saying that. I mean, the rot goes all the way down to our student governments. Right. We've got kids that are coming up in this K-12 system. They are being taught to hate one another. They are being taught that America should be a communist and socialist country. Right. They are believing in all of this because it's what they're taught every single day. And then they go off to college. They silence the other students. So it's not just the college professors. It's not just the administration. We certainly need alternative options, right? We need to see more of what we're seeing in Florida. We need to see more of what we see at schools like Hillsdale and University of Austin and things like that, where kids can go to college and they can speak their mind. They're not discriminated or punished because they simply don't agree with those on the progressive left who want to take our country in a completely different direction.
Kim, what's going on with Title IX? I feel like that was hot in the news about 6 months, a year ago, and then it's just kind of disappeared. What's going on with it?
Yeah, we've definitely got to keep this at the forefront, and I know that you guys talk about it a lot. But Title IX, it's our law that protects our girls and our women on college campuses. The Biden-Harris administration is trying to change the definition of sex to now mean gender identity. So if your daughter wants to speak out about having to change in a locker room with a boy, she is now going to be the one punished. So we filed a lawsuit on behalf of Young America's Foundation and Moms for Liberty. There are 26 states and many other organizations across this lawsuit suing also. And the judges across this country are saying, whoa, Biden-Harris, Department of Education, slow down, stop. You cannot change the definition of sex to mean gender identity. And so we're continuing to fight those. We know we're going to have to take it up to the Supreme Court, but they will not stop on the left until they change that definition. And we will not stop until we win and make it so that they can't do that.
Speaking of Moms for Liberty, I love them, and I love that a bunch of moms got sick and tired of all the crap they saw during COVID, and they rose up and fought back. But is that anger, is that activism, do you see it fading away, or are they just as angry and involved now as they were? Essentially, I want everyone to stay involved, not just get angry because right. Your kid had to wear two masks in social studies. Are people still mad?
You know, they're mad, but in how they fight, they're joyful, right? I mean, I myself am a Moms for Liberty member. We have to stand up for our kids. We, you know, as an organization, Moms for Liberty stands over 130,000 parents strong. And, you know, you can see the joy and the happiness and the love that all of these parents have for their kids. We were just recently up in DC at the National Summit, an extremely successful event. President Trump came and spoke, and Tiffany Justice, one of the co-founders, got to interview him on national TV. It was, you know, it was invigorating. And these parents are, again, they're joyful in how they fight because they know that we have to win for our kids, and our kids are watching, right? Tiffany says that all of the time. They are watching how we fight for them and how we fight for their rights and to protect them. And so I don't see it slowing down. I only see it picking up. And it's a really exciting thing to be part of.
Yeah, it is. Keep going. Kim, appreciate you very much. All right. We have light in the mood. Let's make fun of Chuck Schumer. Next. All right, it's time to lighten the mood. Have you ever heard a theory, it's a conspiracy theory, that the people who rule the world, they're not actually people, Now, I've heard different versions of the theory. Maybe they're aliens who take the form of lizards on the planet, or maybe they're actually lizard people. Have you ever heard about the lizard people? Look, I obviously don't believe that they're lizards. They are human beings. But every now and then I will tell you something happens and it kind of gives me pause. Meaning, these people understand they have to pretend to be like us. They have to pretend to share our concerns and share the lives we have. But they're so devoid of anything resembling humanity, maybe they are really lizards, that they can't even do that well. And I was actually snickering about something today that's old, it's really old, as we lighten the mood here. Remember, I think this was Independence Day, if I remember right, so that would be July. Remember when Chuck Schumer, Senate Majority Leader, remember when he posted a picture of himself grilling out? Only that picture, as you can see, those are raw burgers. It's completely raw. They clearly were just thrown on the grill, and then someone threw on a raw slice of American cheese on the raw burgers. And it just gives me the giggles. It just does. I don't know what's funnier, that somebody, staffers, probably more than one person, set up that photo shoot, right? So they didn't understand what it's like to even grill. They don't even relate to you at all. So they set up the photo shoot. That part of it's funny. And the other part of it that I think is maybe even funnier is Chuck Schumer didn't look down and say anything. It didn't even occur to him. He looked down and he didn't. The burger's raw. The cheese isn't even melted. This doesn't look real. Wouldn't that occur to you? It would occur to me, but I'm not a lizard person. Anyway, it makes me laugh. I'll see you tomorrow.
This is an iHeart podcast.